Listener, for some, summer is their favorite season. With travel picking up, kids out of school, and adventures on the horizon. For others, juggling everything can feel overwhelming, and you end up just surviving the season instead of thriving. As someone who covers heavy true crime stories week after week, I know how important it is to protect your peace and build in time for yourself, even during the busy summer months. I make sure to carve out moments that help me reset so I can keep showing up fully for my work and life. Therapy can help you better understand your needs, feel more confident setting boundaries, and create a version of summer that actually feels good. BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, with over 30,000 therapists and more than 6 million people helped globally. They have an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 from over 1.7 million client reviews. Their therapists are fully licensed in the U.S. and work according to a strict code of conduct. BetterHelp does the matching work for you with a short questionnaire so you can focus on your goals. And if it is not the right fit, you can switch to a different therapist at any time. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. Apple Valley sits in the hills of Knox County, about an hour northeast of Columbus, Ohio, a lake community of winding drives and modest houses built around a private reservoir. The lots are wooded. In the second week of November, the maples have already let go, and the oaks are letting go reluctantly. The hills turning the scraped brownish yellow that central Ohio wears that time of year. The lake goes from recreation to scenery, flat and cold under a dull sky. Around the county is corn stubble and wooded ridges, white farmhouses and Amish buggies on the berms of the state routes. A county of 30-odd churches in one real town. Mount Vernon, the seat, is Courthouse Square, brick storefronts, and a Civil War monument, with a downtown that empties by 6. Tina Herman lived on King Beach Drive with her two children. She was 32. She managed the Dairy Queen in Mount Vernon, and the people she worked with liked her. She was warm, funny, devoted to her kids. A woman in the middle of the usual turbulence of a working life. She and her boyfriend were in the middle of an amicable split. She loved the neighborhood and had been looking for another place in it, because whatever was ending, she did not want Apple Valley to end with it. Her shifts at the Dairy Queen were the armature of the family's week. She worked a single mother schedule, opens and closes and doubles. The store was 3 minutes from her kids' school, work, kids, home. Her best friend a short walk away. The people who knew her described a woman who laughed often and had no enemies. Her children were Sarah and Cody Maynard. Sarah was 13, in the 7th grade. Cody was 11, a 5th grader, a boy remembered for a sweet temperament and a mop of hair, his joyful smile. Their father, Larry Maynard, lived out of the area for work but had stayed close and friendly with Tina. Sarah, the eldest, was known as a private girl. She attended middle school. She was old enough to babysit her brother. Cody was an enthusiastic boy of 11, described as sweet, funny, gentle. The vocabulary of a childhood that had not yet needed bigger words. And there was Stephanie Sprang. She was 41, a mother of 3, and she lived a few doors down. She and Tina had become friends, inseparable, in and out of each other's houses. On the morning of Wednesday, November 10th, 2010, Stephanie walked over to Tina's house, as she had walked over 100 mornings before. The kids went to school. The morning was gray and cold. Nothing about what was to come announced itself. November 10th in central Ohio ran gray and raw. The sky the color of an old dry road, daylight already contracting towards the 4:30 dusk of the coming solstice. By the following afternoon, all four of them, Tina, Stephanie, Cody, and Sarah, would be gone. Matthew Hoffman was 33 years old that November. The file on him was assembled afterward. It shows how much a community can fail to know about a man. He grew up in central Ohio and finished at the Knox County Career Center in 2000. Then he went west to Steamboat Springs, Colorado, ski country, where he worked as a plumber's helper and lived at the edges of the other people's prosperity. There he committed the crime that should have been the warning. He had not broken into a client's vacation condo to rob it. He had moved into it, quietly, living in a space that belonged to someone else while they were away, treating another person's home as his own for as long as the absence held. When a caretaker discovered the intrusion, Hoffman set the place on fire and fled. Investigators in Rauch County pieced it together. He pleaded to arson, and a judge gave him 8 years. He served 6 in a Colorado prison, and the file closed there, in the mountains, 1,000 miles from the county that would need it. He was not a thief. A thief wants objects and leaves. Hoffman wanted the inside of other people's lives, the trespass itself, and he had reached for fire the moment it was threatened. Everything he would do in Ohio a decade later was already there in that condo. Back in Knox County, he bought a small house on Columbus Road in Mount Vernon in 2009, and he worked, when he worked, as a tree trimmer. The return itself was unremarkable. Ohio was home, prison was behind him, and an ex-convict with a trade settling near family is the system operated as intended. Parole and its paperwork ran their course and expired. By 2010, he was a resident, 30 years old, his past sealed in a Colorado file cabinet. He was entitled to a fresh start, and squandering it, unemployed and running out of money as the year ran out of warmth. An arborist without steady employment, a climber of trees for money, and for something he never named. The neighbors half knew him, which is all men like him permit. A loner, his own mother would call him, publicly. When the cameras came, quiet, he kept to himself. He had a girlfriend for a time. Inside the man, the quiet had a texture that no one on the street could have guessed. He had become strange. He began to fill his home with leaves, bags and bags of them, stacked in rooms, floor to ceiling in places, tens of thousands of leaves, hauled indoors by a man whose relationship to trees had crossed out of profession into obsession. He climbed trees at night. He kept them in his fashion. None of it was known. Nobody entered his house during that period. And by the second week of November 2010, Matthew Hoffman was unemployed, broke, and scouting. What he was scouting for, by his own after-the-fact telling, was a house to burglarize. He drove and walked the county with a burglar's eye, reading driveways and sightlines and routines. King Beach Drive was not fate. It was part of his inventory. He would tell investigators he had been in the area before, that the street's geometry recommended it, the woods behind the spacing of the lots, the specific house recommended itself by the one-inch invitation of the garage door. He had been inside houses before, moving through the county's unlocked world while it was at work, the same hunger as Colorado, the being inside another life while its owners were away. On King Beach Drive in Apple Valley, he found what he was looking for, a house with no close neighbors on the critical side, a garage door standing ajar, trees swaying behind it, filled with leaves. Any other time, he would have taken a bag and filled that bag with leaves. More leaves to bring to his home, to surround himself with, to lay in, to spread himself on. He loved the leaves. They comforted him in a way no human had. He did not know who lived there in the house on King Beach Drive. He would say so himself later in writing, a plain denial of ever having known a single person inside. Tina Herman did not show up for her shift in the Dairy Queen on Wednesday. She was a manager who showed up, and the absence rang wrong immediately. And by Thursday, November 11th, the wrongness had grown official enough for a welfare check. The alarm had risen the ordinary human way first, co-workers calling a phone that did not answer, the school registering 2 absences that no parent had called in, Stephanie missing from her own house a few doors away, which turned one family's silence into 2 households' worth. In the hours before any deputy was involved, the people who loved these 4 were already calling each other, each dialing the next, each hearing the same nothing. A sheriff's deputy went out to King Beach Drive. The house was quiet. The family truck was gone. And inside, the deputy found what the sheriff would later call an unusual amount of blood. Enough that the question was not whether something terrible had happened, but to how many. There were signs of cleanup, hurried and partial. The house said violence. The empty room said abduction. There were no bodies. That set the next 8 days on their course. Blood in quantity, in more than one place, and no one to attach it to. Four people were gone. Tina, Stephanie, whose morning visit had put her inside whatever had happened. Cody, Sarah, the family's little dog, Tanner, was gone too, which registered as a detail then and as horror later. The same day, Tina's pickup truck turned up miles away, near Kenyon College. Kenyon in November is bare stone and bare trees. On a bike trail nearby, a deputy came across a man sitting alone in a parked car and stopped and questioned him. A man sitting alone near where a missing woman's truck has just been dumped earns a question. The man had answers. He was calm. His name was Matthew Hoffman, and the deputy took it down, ran what there was to run, found no live warrant, no red flag, and released him. The stop became the case's great civic wound. The deputy did the job as the job is defined. A name, a warrant check, nothing returned. The failure was upstream, and every system that had let a convicted arsonist settle into a county without a flag. And so, on the 11th of November, with the blood not yet dry on King Beach Drive, the man who had spilled all of it answered a deputy's question and drove away to his house of leaves. And while he did, Sarah Maynard was in his house the whole time. By that evening, Knox County understood it had a catastrophe. Four missing, one crime scene, no bodies, no suspect, and the county began to search. It searched for 8 straight days, and Matthew Hoffman went home and lived his days. Matthew held still. He waited to see whether the county would find its way to his door. The Knox County Sheriff's Office ran the case with help it had never needed before. State agents from BCI, the FBI eventually consulting, a rural department of modest size, suddenly administering one of the largest search operations in Ohio that year. Sheriff David Barber became the county's public face, a career lawman standing at the microphones each day with worse news. And the men and women under him worked the hours a missing children's case demands. What follows is drawn from Hoffman's own written confession, produced as part of the bargain that spared his life, and checked against the physical evidence. He entered through the garage sometime that morning, armed with a box cutter, intending, he insisted, only to steal. He was inside when he realized the house was not empty. Tina Herman and Stephanie Spring were home. The morning had put them together, as their mornings usually did. Stephanie had walked over, two women in a kitchen on a gray Wednesday, with the kids at school and the day ahead of them shaped like every other day. The wounds concentrated in their backs suggested that the last ordinary thing either woman did was turn around. Matthew Hoffman did not panic. Panic is a burst. What the bodies recorded was repetition. Multiple stab wounds to the back in both women. Sharp force wounds delivered over and over to people turned away from him. The little dog, Tanner, barked, and he killed the dog too. A box cutter is short, intimate, and slow. A gun panics. A box cutter persists. He had carried it in as a tool of the burglary, and when that plan collapsed, he did not drop it and run for the door that was still open. He used it until the house was silent, and then he stayed. He stayed in the house with what he had done for hours into the afternoon. He was still there when the school day ended. Cody Maynard came home first. He was 11. He walked into his own house, and Hoffman killed him with a box cutter. A fifth grader with a backpack stabbed again and again. Sarah came home after. She was 13, coming home from the seventh grade on an ordinary Wednesday. A girl walking into her home, into the worst facts of her life, standing in her own kitchen. Her brother was dead. Her mother was dead. Her mother's best friend was dead. And the man who had done all of it was standing in her house. He did not kill her. He bound her, and he kept her in the house. Through the hours that followed, into the evening, Matthew Hoffman dismembered the bodies of Tina Herman, Stephanie Spring, and Cody Maynard, in the same house the family had woken up in that morning. The burglary by that point was 12 hours gone. This was concealment. This was a project undertaken calmly in a house he now controlled.
Hi, my name is Valerie Haythorn.
Uh-huh.
And I work at a Dairy Queen. I'm the general manager out there.
Uh-huh.
One of my employees did not show up for work this afternoon at 4 o'clock.
Okay.
Which is totally uncharacteristic of her. She's one of my managers.
Okay.
I drove out by her house and went and knocked on the door and left her note. She's not answering her phone, which is totally uncharacteristic. She's not answering her texts, and she is not at home, but her truck and her coat are in her house. Her truck's there and her coat is in the house. I'm very concerned about her.
What's her name?
Her name is Tina Herman, H-E-R-R-M-A-N-N.
Okay.
I know that she and her boyfriend are splitting up, and he can be a real jerk with her.
Okay. Do you have a phone number for her?
God, I do, but it's in my phone. I'd have to call you
okay,
back.
Okay, that's fine. What was your name again?
My name is Valerie Haythorn.
Okay. Okay, I will have a deputy swing out there and check on her.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank
Anytime.
You.
Anytime.
Uh-huh. All right. Bye. Bye.
This is Deputy Sylvia. Can I help you?
Yes, this is Valerie Haythorn.
Uh-huh.
I called in last night about Tina Herman being missing.
Mm-hmm.
I am out at her house now. I just went in her home because I'm so worried about her. There is blood everywhere.
Okay. Where are you at? I'm sorry. I just got back today, so.
Okay.
So you just need to kind of fill me in a little bit, okay?
Tina Herman works for me. She did not show up for work yesterday, and we have not been able to locate her or her children for the last, it's been 24 hours now. I just spoke with
her. No, I'm sorry, ma'am.
Okay.
I just need an address. I just need an address.
481 Kings Beach Drive in Apple Valley.
Okay. Just give us a few minutes and we'll be in route, okay?
Okay. So
don't go back in the house.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying in the driveway.
Okay. Thank you.
No worries.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Gross abuse of a corpse. 3 counts. He did this work in the bathroom with the box cutter and a hatchet brought in from his vehicle. He bagged what he had done in black plastic. And he attempted a cleanup of the house that he abandoned unfinished. Late that night, he loaded the bags and the living girl into Stephanie Springs' Jeep. He drove out of Apple Valley into the dark hills of Knox County toward a place he knew from the other life, the tree life, a wooded preserve near Frederickstown. He drove county roads past midnight in a Jeep that was not his, loaded with a 13-year-old girl who had lost everything she had by sundown. He drove Sarah Maynard to the house on Columbus Road, the House of Leaves, and put her in the basement. For the next 3 days, Knox County looked for a family, as Matthew Hoffman watched.
You want to talk to one of us alone, or do you want us both in here, or be comfortable with both of us being here? Matt?
Hey, Matt, can I ask you a question? You look familiar. You look familiar to me. You work out at the gym?
You know, other people, there's family members out there of other people, and all they want is closure. That's all they want. They've been up for days like you and I have, you know? Heart? Hurts? I don't understand sign language, man. What do you want from us? Tell me what you want from us.
We want a couple minutes here just to kind of think about all this, because I know it's overwhelming for you right now.
I'm beginning to think Matt don't care.
He cares.
The search was enormous by the standards of any rural county. Deputies, state investigators, canine units, aircraft, cadaver dogs, and civilians in the hundreds. They walked the fields of Apple Valley Drive and dragged the edges of the reservoir. They combed Fountain Park and the East Branch and the bike trails, block by block, pond by pond, in the gray November cold, in Carhartts and blaze orange, thermoses and truck beds, church basements making sandwiches. Larry Maynard, the children's father, drove in and stood at the searches and did the interviews a missing family father has to do, asking anyone who knew anything to come forward. There had been blood, but no bodies. A truck, but no driver. The searching had its own economy. Farmers walked their own back acreage so teams would not have to. School buses ran their routes, passed yellow ribbons on every 3rd mailbox. The children inside them were living through the version of the story the adults could not shield them from, that two kids from their own school may be dead. At the vigils, hundreds of candles in the early dark, everyone holding one knew which ending the odds favored, and held the candles anyway. It was the last thing they would ever get to do for four of their own, and they intended to do it properly. Inside the house on King Beach Drive, among the blood evidence, investigators had found items that did not belong to the household. A large tarp, heavy garbage bags, objects with no history in the house, which meant they had arrived with whoever had done this, which meant they had been bought. Investigators traced the products to the Walmart in Mount Vernon, and they began pulling register data and surveillance video, hour by hour, looking for the transaction. They found it. Store cameras showed a man moving through the aisles, selecting tarps and trash bags and a shirt, paying and walking out to the parking lot, where the cameras kept following. He loaded his purchases into a vehicle. The vehicle had plates. The plates went to the Ohio Motor. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans, and it revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. Think about that gap, listener. Most of us know that reaching out is the smart, healthy thing to do, and yet something still gets in the way. So what can we do as a society to close that gap? Maybe it starts with the small stuff. Checking in on a friend, encouraging someone you care about to consider talking to a professional. If you're thinking about it for yourself, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, with over 30,000 fully licensed therapists who have served more than 6 million people. They do the matching work for you, and if a therapist isn't the right fit, you can switch at any time. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Listener, let me talk to you about something that would have saved me a lot of headaches over the years. It's called Chime, and it's changing the way people bank. Chime is the most rewarding, fee-free banking out there, and it's built for you, not the 1%. It's not like those traditional old banks that nickel and dime you with overdraft and monthly fees. Chime doesn't do that. They've got thousands of fee-free ATMs too, because why should you ever pay just to get your own money? Here's where it gets good. When you set up direct deposit, Chime members can benefit from up to $1,150 in annual rewards, fee-free. You can get 5% cash back in a category you choose, like gas or groceries. Your savings grow with a 3.75% APY, 9 times the national average. And SpotMe lets you overdraft up to $200, fee-free. If you ever need help, it's real humans around the clock. Chime is rated 5 stars by USA Today for customer service. I use this, and you should too. Head to Chime.com/Obscura. That's Chime.com/Obscura. It only takes a few minutes to sign up.
Chime is a fintech, not a bank. Banking services for MyPay and Chime Card provided by Chime's bank partners. Optional products and services may have fees or charges. Stated annual percentage yield and cash back for Chime Prime only. No minimum balance required. Checking account ranking based on a J.D. Power survey published October 20, 2025. For more information on APY rates, MyPay, SpotMe, and travel perks, go to Chime.com/disclosures.
For vehicle records, and the records returned a name and an address. The least cinematic break in the case was most instructive. A retail receipt, a man planning the concealment of 3 bodies, still has to stand at a register like everyone else. Detectives drew up the warrant for Columbus Road and put SWAT on it. Its owner would get no warning. Now there was probable cause, and there was also a terrible clock, because if the man on the video was the man from the Blood House, then anyone still alive was wherever he was. Before the dawn on Sunday, November 14th, a SWAT team hit the house on Columbus Road. Columbus runs out of Mount Vernon, past body shops and modest frame houses. At that hour, in that season, it was black dark and hard frost. The neighbors asleep, the street about to learn what it had been living beside. The entry was fast and loud, as such entries are designed to be, and it was over in moments. What they found first was the strangeness, the house of a man who had brought the outdoors inside by the ton. Rooms given over to bagged leaves, stacked to the ceiling, A residence turned into a nest. The officers moved through it, toward the basement. Officers who served that warrant described the interior in the spare terms of report writing. The bags of leaves in their hundreds, the leaves everywhere, in piles, glued to the wall, coming from the ceiling. It felt like another universe. Walls in one small room, marked with the doodles of the occupant. A house with almost nothing a normal life requires, and enormous quantities of one thing no life requires at all. The men moved through it with their weapons up, clearing room by room. Sarah Maynard was there, alive, 13 years old, bound and gagged on a makeshift bed of leaves, 4 days into captivity in the house of the man who had murdered her family. The officers cut her loose and brought her up out of the basement and into the gray Sunday light. Knox County got the single mercy this case contains. One of the four was alive. After days of blood evidence and lowering hope, the search had produced a living child. Then the same fact turned over. She had been found in a man's basement, which meant the man was found too. And the man was not talking. Three people were still missing, and hope for them now had to survive the knowledge of what their abductor kept in his house. What those 4 days were is recorded in the charges Hoffman would plead to. Kidnapping and the rape of a child. She was 13. He will die in prison for it, among the other things he will die in prison for. What the sheriff himself kept returning to in the days that followed was her. "We're inspired by Sarah's bravery," David Barber said. The girl in the basement survived 4 days of the unsurvivable and came up the stairs, still herself. Everything the case got afterward, it got because she lived, and the officers who carried her out used the same word the sheriff had used, brave.
Somebody will cry today if I make a phone call after this interview. Somebody will cry, but I guarantee you, some of that cry will be joy because they know where Cody is. They know where Tina is. They know where Stephanie is. I know they'll cry for somewhat joy, Matt, because I've already heard it with Sarah. What I'm probably going to do, Matt, is leave this room, and when I get away from these guys, probably cry like a baby, because it's working on me, man.
I can't say anything suddenly, though. You know, I knew I must have done something wrong, and I found her in my house. She's tied up. So I took care of it. I don't really know anything else. So I was trying to figure out what had happened.
At what point did you find your tied up in your house?
Thursday.
Thursday. Did you ask her? Did you speak with her about, you know, what happened? How did you get here? You know, anything like that?
She said I'd done it. I figured I had done something I didn't know. I just could try to put pieces together.
Did you recognize her as someone that you had seen before? And, you know, did you realize that this is a person you'd seen before that now was in your house? Or
I don't know.
Did it make that connection? You don't know her? I mean, I'm just asking because they were the pictures on the camera and they weren't taken, you know, at the time that this happened. So I was just wondering if you, you know, in other words, if it was someone you knew and then, wow, why? How are you to get here in my house? Because she said that she asked you a couple of times. Do you remember that?
I think what we were talking about earlier and kind of feeling alone. And that's definitely how I felt when I went to Chicago. I knew no one there. I was the only one out of my class sent there.
But you had a purpose.
Yeah.
Ikigai.
What's that?
Japanese.
Oh.
Ikigai. It's a purpose.
Mm.
So I did go out to Colorado after I graduated high school.
Did you?
That's where I got into my first trouble. I did something really bad. And I pieced it together, I figured it out. And I went and turned myself in. That was my first prison time.
You went out there with a sense of purpose.
I guess I burned down a condo.
It's okay. You didn't want to hurt anybody. just wanted a release.
I don't want to hurt anyone. It's not me. You know what antipsychotic medication is?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't... I read about it. It doesn't directly address the problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's just powerful. It tranquilizes. I just wanted to do something bad. I wouldn't be here if I didn't.
Wow, that can work through.
Okay, potentially, I can't, you know, guarantee these things. What facility you might go to, you know, where you might go, what might happen, and the attitude that the people in the system are going to take toward you can be affected by the fact that you decided at this point to do the right thing. From the moment we broke into your house, found you and found her in the basement, you owned it all. You own it all. Okay, you can't do anything about the part of it you own.
I'm sorry. I feel like I failed you. I'm sorry if I let you down. And I found her in my house. She's tied up. So I took care of her.
And nobody thinks that the person in this position that comes to this point does this of their own, through their own fault. I'm not going to try and figure it all out, but I mean, I know, you know, your dad and mom split up when you were three. You went through a life without a dad. That's a major impact. It affects a lot of people in a lot of really negative ways. I know your dad was a 40-year firefighter, and you set some fires, okay?
With all honesty, Matt, I say this very genuinely. You are sitting in self-pity, and that doesn't even help you.
Hoffman was arrested in that house. He said nothing useful. Detectives worked him with the patience reserved for a man who isn't quite right. He was cooperative in tone, but empty in content, and that emptiness held for 4 days while the search kept walking the fields. He was charged at first only with kidnapping, $1 million bond. The search went on, but its character changed. On Monday, the sheriff said the reality that the three missing might be dead was now more prevalent, a hope being lowered into the ground slowly. Family said they were still hopeful. The searchers kept walking the fields. Day 5, 6, 7, nothing. In the jail, Hoffman was placed on suicide watch. He sat there while the county he had hollowed out kept walking its fields in the cold, and he held the only map. The proof was standing in a wildlife preserve near Frederickstown, 60 feet tall, and no one alive but Matthew Hoffman knew to look inside it. The bodies were recovered on Thursday, November 18th, and they were recovered because Matthew Hoffman decided to trade them. Through his attorneys, he offered the location in exchange for his life, and the county took the deal. Prosecutors weighed a death penalty against three families waiting beside telephones and made the only humane call available. Matthew Hoffman's mother had visited him in jail the night before the information came through, her first visit, and told reporters she believed it played a part. What passed between mother and son in that visiting room is theirs. The place was the Cocossing Lake Wildlife Area, off a rural road near Frederickstown, a mile deep into woods so dense that investigators concluded he must have dragged his cargo the final distance. In the middle of that woods stood an old beech, 60 feet of it, hollow through the heart of the trunk. He had put them inside the tree. Tina Herman, Stephanie Sprang, Cody Maynard. The remains, in their black plastic, had been lowered down into the hollow using a rigged pulley. The equipment and craft of his trade turned to this. The little dog was in the tree with them. The bags had settled far down inside the trunk, and the recovery team, unable to reach them from above, had to cut a hole into the living wood to bring the three of them out. The recovery took a better part of the day. The teams worked in the cold under the bare canopy, in a silence witnesses called church-like, a mile from the nearest road, in a preserve where the county's families had hiked and hunted for generations. Men in gloves received what came out of the trunk and carried it out of the woods in procession. The tree had been a landmark to people who loved that ground. It is a different landmark now.
Ohio police have discovered the missing family members of 13-year-old Sarah Maynard, who was found bound and gagged last Sunday in the basement of Matthew Hoffman. The discovery has ended all hopes that they may be found alive. Sarah's mother, Tina Herman, her brother, Cody Maynard, and her mother's friend, Stephanie Sprang, were found stuffed in a hollow tree in Apple Valley, Ohio, after Hoffman's lawyers told authorities where the bodies were. Knox County Sheriff David Barber says the case is now a homicide investigation, but did not characterize the information provided by Hoffman as a confession. There are no other suspects and currently no motive. The victims are believed to have been killed in their blood-spattered home 10 miles from where Hoffman lived on November 10th. It was unclear whether Sarah, who was also in the house at the time, witnessed the killings. Knox County Prosecutor John Thatcher said, quote, "The tragedy today is just devastating. The results aren't what we wanted them to be."
In the aftermath, there was talk about the tree itself, whether it should come down, whether the ground should be marked. The quiet consensus was to leave the woods alone and let the preserve go back to being a preserve. The families buried their dead in proper ground, with services that overflowed the churches. The town lined the routes. Tina and Cody were mourned together, mother and son. In the image from that week, the ribbons, the processions, the Dairy Queen sign with its message up in plastic letters became the county's permanent album of the worst month it ever had. Cocosing kept its trees. Grief does not need the landmark. It knows the way. Only a tree climber could have done it. The concealment was not improvised. It required rope work, rigging, the arborist's knowledge of how a great tree is put together and what a hollow one can hold. Trees were the one thing in Matthew Hoffman's life he was intimate with and the one thing he loved. Hoffman's fixation on trees surfaced everywhere in the case. The profession, the night climbing, the house of leaves, the request from custody that officers not harm the tree. His inner life held a canopy. People were the species he could not connect to. When he gave up the location, he made it clear that he wanted the tree not to be damaged. He considered it sacred. Dr. Ogle's office received what came out of the beach on the 18th. An autopsy in a case like this is not a formality. It is the last interview the victims will ever give, conducted in a steel room. The cause of death was the same for all three. Blood loss from repeated sharp force injuries concentrated in the back. This was consistent with the box cutter Hoffman described. A sharp force injury is either an incised wound or a stab wound, and the difference is direction. An incised wound is longer than it is deep, made by drawing an edge across tissue. A stab wound is deeper than it is long, made by driving the point in. A box cutter, a retractable blade made for cardboard, makes both. It has a short cutting edge and a fine point, and in a hand using force, it opens skin, then fat beneath it, then muscle, and where it reaches them, the vessels. The hatchet, that edge chopping tool, is what answered the bone. The damage meant the autopsies were also reconstructions, the examiners matching and confirming, returning the three people to themselves before they can be returned to their families. The deal that produced the bodies also produced the document, because the bargain required Hoffman to tell authorities in full how and why. The confession was made public that winter, and reading it is like listening to a man describe someone else's crime from very far away. After the murders, by his own telling, he went to fetch gas cans. He was going to go back and burn the house on King Beach Drive to the ground, the same as the Colorado solution. Fire to erase the seeing, three bodies and the evidence with them. But a sheriff's deputy pulled up almost immediately and asked for his license and his business there. So he could not burn the house. He went home instead. He built a campfire in his yard. He drank a bottle of wine. He burned his shoes. On January 6, 2011, in the Knox County Common Pleas Court, before Judge Otho Eister, Matthew Hoffman pleaded guilty to all 10 felony counts. Three aggravated murders, kidnapping, the rape, burglary, abuse of a corpse, tampering. There was no trial, no defense theory, no jury. The plea was the deal completing itself, life in prison with no possibility of parole. Hoffman offered no explanation beyond the document. After the hearing, the Vans took him to prison, where he remains and where he will die. 2 weeks after the bodies came out of the tree, someone set fire to the house on King Beach Drive. The fire caused minor damage and was ruled arson, and it has never been officially explained. Hoffman was in a cell, Whoever struck the match, the house where it happened, had become a thing the county could not look at, and eventually it came down, and the lot went back to grass. The Dairy Queen ran a fundraiser for Sarah and Stephanie's family. There were funds for the funerals, benefit nights, jars by cash registers across the county, with the family's photographs taped to them. Tina Herman was a good mother in the middle of building a life she liked. Stephanie Spring died a few doors from her own home because she was the kind of friend who walked over in the morning. Cody Maynard was 11, and the whole of his life was still ahead of him, and a man he never saw coming took it all from him. Listener, there's a kind of house a person never leaves. Sarah Maynard walked out of the basement on Columbus Road on a Sunday in November. She got free. She grew up. She had the years the tree took from her mother and her brother. She is the one who lived. The officers cut the restraints off her body that morning. They untied her hands and took the gag from her mouth and carried her up into the gray light. And the physical facts of her captivity ended there, on the stairs, in a few merciful seconds. But some bindings no rescue reaches. A part of a person can stay tied in a room the body has already left. A part of her can stay gagged, holding a silence that has no bottom, in a basement that was demolished years ago and still stands, whole and dark, somewhere inside her. Because a house is not only a place, it is also a set of rooms that get built inside a person. And the rooms Hoffman built in that 13-year-old do not come down when the real house does. They cannot be searched or bulldozed or returned to grass. She carries them. She carries them into rooms he never saw, at ages he never touched, through a life he will never know anything about. This is what violence steals. Not only the dead, though it takes them entirely. It takes the survivor's right to a single unhaunted room, the ordinary luxury of walking into a kitchen and finding only that. Somewhere in Sarah, a door stands open into the worst afternoon of her life, and no amount of living closes it all the way. There is a version of her still down in that dark, still bound, still waiting for the sound on the stairs. The woman who walked out has had to build her whole life around that girl and carry her too, gently. The bravery the sheriff named in the first week was never only about those 4 days. It is about every day after, spent being a whole person while carrying a house no one else can see. Hoffman asked one thing of the world when it was over. He asked that the tree be spared, not the women, not the boy, not the girl he kept in the dark beneath his floor. He wanted mercy for wood. He never thought to ask it for her. A man can love a tree and hollow a child, and grieve only the tree. The lot is grass. Sarah goes on to forward, carrying the one house that will never come down, and the girl still bound inside it, climbing up out of that basement every single morning, out of that house of leaves.